From Washington, I'm David Schultz, and this is Talking Tax. So we're heading back to Congress today once again, and the reason is that the big tax package we've discussed several times on this podcast in the recent past appears to be stalling. We're going to be talking about why that is with two guests who have extensive experience with these strange ways of Capitol Hill, PwC's Todd Metcalf and Dave Camp. Metcalf was the former chief tax policy advisor to the Democrats on the Senate Finance Committee, and Camp is a former Republican congressman from Michigan who served as the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. They spoke with Bloomberg Tax and Accounting reporter Samantha Handler about whether this package will actually make it to the president's desk before the end of this year, and Camp started off by saying he's surprised this tax bill is even stalled in the first place.
I would just say that initially when this bill was working through the process, I thought it might be a format for 2025. I think it's run into some choppy waters in the Senate, and I frankly thought it might move through the Senate a little more easily, but I think it seems to be caught up a bit in some of the leadership races that are taking place as a result of Senator McConnell announcing he will not stand for leader after the election, which I think is making it a little more difficult to get this bill to the finish line. So I think the question might be, you know, how invested in this legislation is Senator Schumer, and will there be an opportunity to either vote for it as a standalone, or will it be attached to some other must-pass legislation like FAA?
Todd, did you want to add anything there?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm quite surprised, if I'm being perfectly honest, that it hasn't moved any easier than it is. I think that you have a circumstance where, you know, I think there are a lot of factors. I agree with Chairman Camp. I think the leader election is playing a role. I think the overall election, your politics are playing a role as well. In addition to sort of, you know, whatever else is being said about the child tax credit or the look back provision or whether or not migrants can benefit from the child tax credit. You know, I think one of the other things that is a consistent argument that's being made is that we'll wait till next year, we can get a better deal.
Yes, I was also thinking about that with 2025. Chairman Camp, I'm wondering, you know, what do you make of some Republicans thinking that they might get a better deal next year?
Well, I've certainly heard them make that argument, so I think Todd has a fair point there. And I've always felt that you strike while the iron's hot, and they have an opportunity here. And those opportunities don't always replay in the same way that you might think they do. So when you have an opportunity like this, I think it's important to try to do something. But we'll see. You know, there are other options still, but I would agree with Todd that I thought this would have a much easier time of passage once it got the, you know, very large majority, bipartisan majority in the House, that it would see the same thing. There are important provisions there on the business side. There's some you know, family and children issues that are important. And there's this legislation is paid for, which has been, you know, one of the issues that's kind of divided Congress in terms of passing additional tax measures. It seems to answer a number of questions, but again, it's not getting the support it needs, at least at this point. And it will be important to see where Republican senators end up, at, you know, on this when they come back from Easter.
Senate Finance Chair Ron Wyden has said that retroactivity, you know, for these business provisions might be off the table in 2025 if this bill doesn't pass. Todd, you know, I'm wondering, you know, how would that affect the business community, or what do you make of that statement?
Well, I mean, the retroactivity would preserve the sort of pre-expiration sort of tax status. This is effectively by eliminating retroactivity, it would effectively probably be something, and I'm not the expert here. I'm not the joint committee estimator, if you will. But I've heard that that could, you know, have an effective and a sort of one-time tax increase of $100 billion on the broader business community. Now, you know, $100 billion may not sound like a lot, but, you know, some companies have sort of R&E expenses that they're either deducting or having to capitalize now that they'd like to be able to deduct. And that's creating, in some instances, multi-billion dollar cash flow issues in real time. So those would not be restored if the retroactivity is not there. But I think, you know, Chairman Wyden is making a point, not because he likes it, but I think that by the end of 2025, is if that's when we're negotiating this, then the view of many, particularly probably maybe not Chairman Wyden per se, and you know, as a policy preference, but many on the Democratic side of the aisle will say, this is going to cost $100 billion to create this retroactivity, this seamless application of tax policy, and we're not prepared to do that.
Right, I guess we'll see what happens with this tax bill. Turning to 2025, and we have a slew of tax breaks that will be expiring from the 2017 tax law. What are you all watching for over the next few months or the next year in terms of how the committees are preparing to start those negotiations? Chairman Camp, let's start with you.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what the committees do. And there's been some talk that the at least the majority in the Ways and Means Committee may create some working groups. You know, obviously the election will have a lot to say about who's going to set the agenda. Is it unified government? Is it divided government? But you kind of see the outlines of where policy discussions might go, given where the various proposals have written. And at least in terms of the nominees for president, President Biden has introduced a fair amount of detail, and it sort of matches with the detail that he's introduced before. And at least at this time, former President Trump has not really said a whole lot about tax other than he'd like to get to a 15% corporate rate. So there may be some more information coming from, you know, the Republican nominee at some point.
Todd, do you have anything to add there on what you're watching?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the things that Chairman Smith has made a point about is that I think 19 of the 25 Ways and Means Republicans were not on the committee in 2017. That doesn't mean they weren't in Congress, but they were not on the committee in 2017. So there's a lot of education to do. While I think the personnel, the members of the Senate Finance Committee are a little more stable, more of them have been there since the 2017 debates. I can tell you, as you probably know, and a lot of the tax staff has turned over, both at the member level as well as at the committee level. And so, you know, there's a lot of education to be done as to, you know, why were these decisions made? How were they made? What trade-offs were undertaken in order to make the policy they made. I think that is not a small effort because, you know, the TCJA obviously was a big reform package. A lot of choices were made. And frankly, there are a lot of folks around now or working on the committees and for members of the committees now who weren't around when those decisions were made. These tax cuts that are expiring, trillions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars in tax cuts that are expiring at the end of 2025 are going to impact millions and millions, tens of millions of voters. And so whoever's in charge, there's not going to be sort of I don't think there's going to be a pass the buck moment or let's just let these expire. But it is sort of, to me, the combinations and permutations of how those negotiations would play out where they have to have bipartisan agreement is a fascinating thing to think about. And I'm not sure, I know, I haven't fully wrapped my head around it.
And to that point, I think it's really important that even though this bipartisan tax bill may not get signed into law, it has been an important exercise for both Senate Finance and Ways and Means to go through that. Not only do the staffs have to talk and build relationships and understand the issues, but having moved it at least through the House and taken in the concerns and the various aspects of that legislation, I think is a real an important almost training exercise for 2025.
So, Chairman Camp, to that point, you know, if we are in divided government, do you think this bipartisan tax bill and the fact that it came together should give people some optimism about lawmakers coming to an agreement on 2025 tax breaks?
Well, I see it a couple of ways. I think, yes, I think there's some optimism there that actually the system did work. But I think also there's some caution there in that this bill has been difficult to get over the finish line, even though it has some very popular provisions to members of both parties and is fully paid for. So I think it's going to be challenging. And we talked about some of the reasons why it isn't getting over the finish line. But, you know, I do think that all in all, it was better to have attempted this than not have attempted it, looking at 2025 coming down the pike.
And Todd, you mentioned the turnover of both members and staff ahead of 2025. You know, I'm wondering, you know, are there any provisions that, you know, maybe aren't necessarily on the table in 2025, but you think could now be on the table because there are so many new lawmakers and new Republicans in particular on the committee?
I mean, one of the things that I think has been quite interesting in public statements that have been made by Chairman Smith and his staff and is that, you know, the whole code is on the table. Is the corporate rate at the right spot? Is 21 right? Does it need to be lower? Could it be a little higher? Where do you get the most bang for the buck in terms of growth? Maybe it's not, maybe it isn't the corporate rate. Maybe it is keeping tax rates lower on individuals as, you know, in terms of economic growth. I think that we don't know the answers to those questions, but I think that the fact that someone like Chairman Smith has said publicly multiple times, not just, you know, one off the cuff remark, that we need to look at the whole code and figure out what is working and what is not. Now, you know, I think some people could look at that cynically and say, oh, well, he doesn't like the IRA energy tax credits, for example. And we saw when the House passed that Ways and Means reported a bill that they used the repeal of a number of those provisions as the offset. But, you know, that's a bill that everyone, I think, knew was not going to the president's desk. And so I think we all know, those of us who follow this sort of stuff for a long time, that wasn't a hard vote. And even in a circumstance, though, where there wasn't a hard vote, you had the folks who have a lot of biofuels production, et cetera, in their districts coming forward and saying, hey, I'm, you know, you want to get rid of EV credits, you want to get rid of some of these other things, but biofuels, that employs a lot of people in my district, so take that out. The question will become, as the IRA credits have sort of been in the marketplace for a couple of years by the time that we're having this discussion in 2025, where will those investments have been made? And will that same sort of, you know, concern for the economics and in their districts, will that prevent maybe what seems like an easy way to find a few hundred billion dollars to offset other things, maybe that becomes harder. But I'm also prepared to be surprised in 2025 that there might be some new ideas in the changing world that we live in. So I think it's going to be a really interesting journey that we're going to be on for the next 18 months to 2 years.
Chairman Camp, are you prepared to be surprised as well, especially with all the new Republicans who are on the committee?
Well, yeah, I am, because also we're not looking at this necessarily in a vacuum. There's all this activity internationally at the OECD and at the UN that may have some bearing on this as well. But often what drives, at least initially, the politics and some of the policy and tax is on the individual side. And those are the provisions that are expiring. And so how are those going to be dealt with? And then there's some broad questions such as, will there be, you know, deficit spending on this tax bill? How much, if any, of it will be paid for? And what does that mean? So, I mean, there's some bigger issues that need to be resolved. But yes, I think that they are going to look at least Chairman Smith has mentioned looking at this thing and with kind of a fresh set of eyes. And some of the concepts in the TCJA were new at the time. And they want to really get a sense of how that's going to come together.
Todd, another thing that's come up a few times now is offsets and how much these tax breaks will need to be paid for, if any. One of the pay-fors in 2017 was the SALT cap, the state and local tax deduction cap. We've seen Republicans and Democrats now try to raise that cap or get rid of it completely. What are you watching in that fight in 2025?
To the first question about whether I think that offsets are going to be part of the discussion, I think they're going to have to be. We're not talking, you know, if you think about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act had a reconciliation instruction that allowed an increase in the deficit of $1.5 trillion. Now, we will be, when this discussion is taking place, 8 years closer to the bankruptcy potentially of Social Security and Medicare. And we're also talking about, you know, if we were just to extend all of the expiring provisions in the 2017 Act. We're looking at a cost in excess of double or nearly double the amount of money that was allowed to increase the deficit of the 2017 Act. You ask about SALT in particular. I have a very, very difficult time imagining a return of the SALT deduction as we knew it before 2017. I cannot imagine that. The good news, though, in terms of offsets and the way our budget rules work is whoever is in charge of this could provide some additional SALT relief and still raise money because, as you know, that $10,000 cap also expires at the end of 2025, which means that if they say, okay, well, $10,000 we've discovered is not enough in certain parts of the country, so maybe it needs to be indexed. So maybe we'll start at $10,000, but it'll go up as prices go up. Maybe we'll eliminate the marriage penalty component because it's that $10,000 cap applies to an individual filer filing singly. So you could see some adjustments without, again, undermining the principle that was, you know, at the heart of that cap in the 2017 Act, and still raise probably a substantial amount of money to offset other tax relief that you're trying to provide.
That was former Republican Congressman Dave Camp and former Democratic Senate staffer Todd Metcalf, now both with PwC, speaking with Samantha Hamler. And that's it for today's podcast. You can find up-to-the-minute news and the latest tax and accounting developments at our website, news.bloombergtax.com. That website, once again, is news.bloombergtax.com. Today's Talking Tax was produced by Chris Chaffee and myself, David Schultz. The editor for today's episode was Martha Mueller Neff. From Washington, I'm David Schultz. Thanks for listening.
In a global tax landscape that changes by the day, it's what you don't know that can leave you exposed. At Bloomberg Tax, we provide market-leading intelligence and practical applications to help tax professionals work smarter, faster, and more accurately. Our solutions provide the insights you need for game-changing outcomes. To revolutionize your performance in real time, the difference is Bloomberg Tax. Learn more at pro.bloombergtax.com.